This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Time for the player spotlight on Wyman and Bob, and we've got Carlos Hyde on the line. Carlos, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, and especially after that win, tell us how good that felt to get back out there on the field. I think the last time you were on the field was against the Arizona Cardinals the first time, and, man, you look good. How did you feel?
I felt great. It took me a couple of series, you know, to get back in, you know, back into, you know, that game shape. I was a little winded in the beginning. Settled down and felt great being back out there. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no kidding. And talk a little bit about your offensive line and especially the performance of Damian Lewis. I mean, the kid never had played center before, and it seemed like they were opening some big holes for you.
Yeah, offensive line, you know, to me did a great job that night. You know, just opening lanes for me, allowing me to get downhill, you know, and also play physical. And, you know, they also did a good job of blocking for Russ, giving him time to get the ball down to the receivers and make big plays. And also, D. Lou did a, you know, hell of a job for that to be his first time playing center, to come in and on a short week and, you know, take that challenge on head first and, you know, and do a good job is, you know, definitely an accomplishment for that guy. That's off to him.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard this, Carlos. It's mostly for us in the media, this let Russ cook thing. And I don't know if you've heard that expression, but I always feel like Pete, he always wants to run the ball. And how important is the running game to your offense?
I mean, the running game is, you know, is the passing game's best friend. You know, right. They go hand in hand. So when we're able to do both, you know, we're a dangerous team. And, you know, the week before, you know, just playing the Cardinals, you know, we was throwing the ball a lot, you know, kind of getting away from the run game. So, you know, we just wanted to get back to our identity, you know, that's playing, you know, balance on the offense, throwing the ball, running the ball, and, you know, taking care of the ball. And we did a good job of that.
We're talking to Carlos Hyde on Wyman and Bob. And you know, I was just looking. I remember you mostly, Carlos, when you were with San Francisco. Were you with Mike Solari down there?
I was. He was there my rookie year.
Yeah, yeah. And he just seems like a really good coach, a good offensive line coach. Do you work a lot with him and the offensive line? I know you have running back coach, but do you work with him quite a bit as far as coordinating the running game?
No, not much. Yeah. You know, I do talk to him. You know, once the run game is already installed, I do talk to him. You know, just trying to see what he was thinking about the run game. You know. Any advice, you know, any tips, you know, to help.
Yeah. Hey, Carlos, we were just talking about another Carlos Dunlap and how, you know, he did a post-game interview and he's just so happy to be here. And, you know, what do you see? I mean, you've been to a lot of different places. You've been Cleveland, Jacksonville, KC, Houston. What's different about this place? Because you just see the joy in Carlos Dunlap and, you know, when he describes just loving playing football again.
Yeah, I think it's the winning part. You know, you come here, you expect to win. Even if, you know, we can be down 21, 30 points, you know, we expect to come back and win, finish strong. I think it's that part, the winning part, the coach's energy, the team culture, you know, just the energy in the facility, you know. You just have to be here, honestly, to feel it. It's kind of hard to try to explain it. He was, you know, here, a part of it, you would definitely understand better.
Well, and I don't know if you know Jill, who sits at the front desk, but, I mean, it starts there, you know, with her. It's just her attitude. It's the culture. It just seems like it's just a joyful place. It's, you know, obviously it's about winning, but it just seems like the culture there is just so much different than everywhere else. Very positive. Seems like what Pete said, tries to make it a joyful atmosphere for you guys.
Yeah, you hit it spot on.
Yeah. Hey, so let's talk a little bit about Thanksgiving. What are your plans? What do you guys do on Thanksgiving Day? You're still practicing?
We have practice today, and then we're off tomorrow. don't really have any plans for, you know, Thanksgiving itself. Just probably watch some football, study some film, you know, eat a little food, you know, not too much. You know, I want to stay ready for Monday night, so can't eat too much.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of the Thanksgiving meal?
My favorite part of macaroni and cheese.
You know, you're the second person that I've talked to that has macaroni and cheese on Thanksgiving. I didn't know that was a tradition.
Oh, well, sure. In my house, it is.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
We were talking about the other day. I guess Patrick Mahomes puts ketchup on his macaroni and cheese. You put ketchup on your macaroni and cheese?
I put hot sauce.
Oh, hot sauce.
Pringles real hot. Yep.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. We're getting all the really super necessary things out of Carlos Hyde here. He puts hot sauce on his macaroni and cheese. Hey, we really appreciate you spending the time, man. And welcome to Seattle, because I haven't been able to talk to you yet. And we're glad you're here. And happy Thanksgiving, and we really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. All right, have a good one.
Okay, you too. There we go. The Seahawk Player Spotlight is brought to you by Michael's Automotive Group. And, yeah, Carlos Hyde, how about fantasy-wise? Gross, did you ever play fantasy football?
A year or two. I've done it.
Were you any good?
Yeah.
You were good?
No.
Oh, you were no.
No.
Okay, you know who's good?
Maura.
Maura Dooley. She is the queen of fantasy football and won the last 2 years. Am I right?
You always give me more credit. I finished second year before last, and I won last year.
You talked a lot of mess for a while.
But I also won two leagues last year.
You won two what?
So
two leagues.
I finished second the year before, but last year I won two separate leagues.
Okay.
That is impressive.
Well, who are your superstars?
Oh, I had Christian McCaffrey last year. That was definitely it.
Okay.
This year, Devontae Adams.
Devontae.
And Derrick Henry are doing pretty well for me.
Okay, but those ones are easy. What about some of the tough pickups that you have to do as a fantasy football? I mean, where you can get like a guy, you know, who, like a DK Metcalf, his rookie year or something like that, where he's not so well known,
yeah,
and you get him later. What have been your good gets there?
Well, that's where you have to kind of follow along week to week. You can I post Twitter videos that 710 ESPN tweets out if you need any help, and you have to just hit the waiver wire. You can keep track. You might see someone like Travis Fulgham when he was emerging for the Eagles early on, and especially if you have someone that's hurt and going to be out for a while, you just have to go pick those guys up as they kind of develop. And Carlos Hyde was someone,
yeah,
that I told everyone to pick up last week because you know, because of his injury, he hadn't played much this year, so a lot of people had dropped him.
Right.
And then, you
knew he was going to play a lot when he was healthy, that he was going to get the ball a lot for sure.
Turned out well last week for him.
Yeah. So you can go to 710sports.com and find Maura Dooley's
Not on the website. It's on Twitter.
On
the
Twitter.
710 ESPN Twitter, yeah.
710 ESPN Twitter.
You know Twitter, Dave.
No, I do not, Gross. I do not.
He gets on it more than you would think, Gross.
Well, there's
many, many people carrying your name on Twitter.
Well, somebody.
Dave Wyman doesn't tweet as one.
Yeah, yeah. I think that might be Stecker. Might do that every once in a while. Yeah, I remember one time my daughter thought it was really funny because when she got her first job, she went to I think Jimmy John's, and I guess she aced the sandwich test. And so the quote was, "My daughter thinks she's hot bleep because she passed the Jimmy John sandwich test." Or something like that. It was just something I was teasing her about. And then her friends found out about it. But anyway, yeah, I wouldn't get on. Do you do much Twitter? I know you tweeted out the thing about the play the other day. But
Do I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on it. I'm on it every day, sure.
Yeah.
I don't tweet as much as most people do, but I like it. Like you said, I originally used it for news. You heard something happen in the world. If you type that into Twitter, you'll find people who are there talking about it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
That's kind of why I liked it.
5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Groz, any good or bad Thanksgiving? I got two negative Thanksgiving stories.
Real quick. Go ahead.
No. What do you got? Good or bad?
No, I got a bad thing to play. It's not necessarily mine. It's something from an old television show.
I think I know what you're talking about. But at school, I was supposed to dress up like as a pilgrim. So I think I was in the seventh grade, sixth grade, and I had the Pilgrim hat with the buckle on it, and then, you know, some kind of hokey vest or something, and then the buckle shoes. So I looked like a pilgrim, like if you just were to type in, you know, pilgrim.
Right.
And then, you know, I had to read this thing, and it was at school, you know, and it was for some play or whatever. And I don't know, the thing was something about the beginning of America or the first Thanksgiving or whatever. So my mom thought it was so cool that she made me do it at like our Thanksgiving at our house.
When how old were you?
I was like sixth grade, fifth grade, something like that. So what?
Old 11? Enough to be embarrassed.
10, 11. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So she makes me, you know, come on, you got to do this. You know, I don't know why I didn't just say no, but I guess I wasn't a difficult child. So I had to read that thing in front of a whole bunch of people. And there were other kids there, too. And so I was like, oh, man, this is the worst. The other bad one I had was the first time I tried to cook the turkey. You know, you're supposed to get rid of all the stuff in the cavern.
The giblets.
The neck and everything. Yeah, I totally
the giblets, yeah.
Left them in. Left them in. Yeah, and then it was undercooked. And then I tried to make gravy, and it was greasy. Text into 710-710 some of your worst and best Thanksgiving memories.
I want to play a clip from – do you remember this show, Dave?
WKRP?
WKRP in Cincinnati?
Sure do.
A lot of people don't. If you don't, it was a show about a radio station in Cincinnati. And they did, I think, they tried to do a Thanksgiving promotion is the way I'll put it. And they forgot one key fact, and it went like this.
What a sight, ladies and gentlemen. What a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object, perhaps a skydiver, plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet in the air. Second, the third. So no parachutes yet.
Those happy skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but...
Oh, my God, they're talking! Oh, Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of my eyes! One just went through the windshield of a parked car! Running around pushing each other. Oh my goodness! Oh, the humanity! People are running about. The turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement. I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think I'm going to step inside. I can't stay out here and watch this any longer. No, I can't go in there.
Children are searching for their mothers, and oh, not since the Hindenburg tragedy has there been anything like this. How much longer I can hold my position here, Johnny? The crowd.
Les, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. If you just tuned in, the Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkeys. Film at 11.
Les
turkeys
Nessman,
are
right?
Heading. Yeah, turkeys are hitting the ground like bags of wet cement.
So that was WKRP's
Thanksgiving promotion. The bit ends with the boss who just went by Big Guy saying, I swear to God, I thought turkeys could fly.
Somebody texting in, the only thing I remember about WKRP is Lonnie Anderson. And I had a Lonnie Anderson garbage can, by the way. It was metal.
A what?
Lonnie Anderson. She was on like a, you know, silk screened or whatever on the garbage can. Lonnie Anderson, and she was like in a bikini or something. And then that became famous.
That sounds very odd to me. I know the bikini photo, but have it screened on a garbage can.
On a little metal garbage can, which became famous in my house because the first time I got caught drinking was because Bobby Clements, my buddy, threw up into the Lonnie Anderson garbage can, and it made a splattering sound. And so, of course, my mom came out, and we were busted, all because Bobby threw up in the Lonnie Anderson garbage can. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was you got any personal bad memories or good memories or anything about Thanksgiving? It seemed like every year there's some people that go and play the Turkey Bowl. Is it Michael Bradley?
I think is that when he's doing his high dive contest? There's one event he does something like that. No, I mean, for me, Thanksgiving has basically been, it's been good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm knocking on wood now because I'm running it tomorrow, but I've had mainly good times. You know, like the last 10 years, I spent a lot of Thanksgivings on the road doing Seattle U games.
Right.
Because they want to play ball, so I spent a lot of times on the road. Didn't really have any bad ones to think of. Although it's funny, you talked about, you made me think of a completely different thing. The best way to get out of trouble, when I was a kid, how I'd get out of trouble with my parents when I wasn't home, when I'd miss curfew or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Should I give that secret up?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd call my house from where I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm late for curfew. My mom would answer the phone. She'd go, hello, and I go, Mom, it's for me. I got it. And she'd hang up. Assuming I was downstairs.
Oh!
And it worked.
That's really good.
It worked like 5 or 6 times. And until I told them about it 10 years later, I mean, I waited.
Yeah.
They didn't know.
Yeah.
They actually didn't know.
Wow.
See, it made me think of that when you're talking about getting out of something with your parent or, you know, getting out of trouble at home. We had good Thanksgivings as a kid because we didn't have, you know, I mean, you always hear about Thanksgiving, families having problems, fighting, stuff like that. We never had that.
Yeah.
A part of it may have been because my mom is Canadian from Newfoundland, so she didn't grow up with Thanksgiving, so we didn't ever have her family around for Thanksgiving. She was the only one who left Newfoundland.
Right.
So it was always just my dad's family, and they for the most part got along.
Yeah. You know, one thing I remember about getting in trouble from my family, I got in trouble. What was the concert I went? I went to a Ted Nugent concert, and we were supposed to go to the concert, and instead I had, you know, some beers or whatever. So I got in trouble. I got busted for that. So my parents made me go out for track because it was during, like, I got in trouble like 3-4 times, and I was, you know, my grades were starting to suffer. It was because I didn't go out for baseball because I hated baseball because I was terrible at it. And so I got in so much trouble that the next year my parents told me, you have to go out for track. So I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And so I got good at it, and I got good at the shot put for some reason. I had a really good coach.
You're strong.
Well, I mean, I was.
You're a football player. You're a big, powerful guy.
Well, I mean, I was always the smallest guy at the shot put ring. You know, because
oh yeah, those are big guys.
I was like 190, you know, 195, 200, whatever. And so by the end of the year, I got good enough to where I won the state championship in the state meet. And so my parents are like super happy with me, and they're just like, "Oh man, this has been so great." That night, I went out on, I think it was my junior prom, and I was getting out of a limousine, and we all got together. There was like 50 of us in this limousine, and there was, you know, a bottle of champagne in there. And the one guy that gets caught with the bottle of champagne, that's me. So the same day that I didn't do a lot of bad stuff, but whenever I did, I always got caught. So you talk about, you know, after a while, your parents, you know, the third, fourth time that you're trying to pull that scam on them about the phone
it
scam.
It worked
there.
Like a charm, though.
Yeah. Well, that,
yeah,
that,
I know what you mean, though.
But yeah, I got caught every single time. So, yeah.
I only really got caught bad once drinking, and that's when my mom, I would come in to see them before I go to bed, and I was underage and was out drinking and had way too much and was confident. You know, remember when you were young, you were confident that I can fake this, no
right.
problem, because you're an idiot. And so I stood in the doorway and just, you know, leaned up against the door, and it took my mom about 30 seconds to say,
yeah.
"You're drunk." And I'm like, "What are you, crazy?" And as I said that, my hand slipped and I fell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just completely, and all she did was turn and say my father's name, who was asleep in bed with her. And I mean, he shot up like a rocket. And my parents didn't drink, so this was a bad thing. So I was actually doing, this is when I was in high school, I was doing high school, college football games at my dad's radio station. And the team, Westchester Community College, was playing a game in Virginia the next day. So I had to be up at 6 a.m. to drive to do the game at 3 in the afternoon. And so he woke me up at 5:30 and expected me to be all hungover and was really ready to just lay into me. But the other thing about when you got drunk when you were really young is you really didn't get hungover.
Yeah.
You felt fine. So I felt he was very surprised that I felt okay. But
yeah,
that was burned pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, I remember one time trying to hide the fact that that I had drank the night before. So I was in the shower, and I had the shower going, and I was cupping my hands, just drinking as much water as I possibly could, because I knew that was going to be like a dead giveaway. But it's funny, having kids now, like, I know every expression on their face. I've been looking at their faces ever since they were born. And so, when you're a kid and you come home and you're like, gosh, how do my parents know? Like, of course they know. I know exactly what my kids are. If they're lying or if they're doing anything, which they typically don't. But, yeah.
Right.
You notice every last little thing. I think we can come up with a couple more stories, Groz, coming up here next in the next segment. I've got one about...
It's a perfect way to go to Thanksgiving, is just telling stories.
Yeah.
Just the Dave's telling stories, sitting by the fireplace.
There you go. We are getting requests for that on the text line. So.
All right. Well, and then later in the show, we'll talk about the Seahawks win if. This is our last time to be on the air until the Seahawks game starts next Monday. Won't have a show, won't have a late show, the afternoon show on Monday. The pregame will start then. So we'll do that at the end. But yeah, coming up next, we'll get some stories out of the Groz. That's next on Wyman and Bob, 710 ESPN Seattle. Welcome back to Wyman and Bob with Dave Grosby and Dave Wyman. So, really quick, we got a text from Jen in Beaverton, who's one of our favorite, and she says, "Aren't you glad you got caught, Dave? You were blessed." Jen in Beaverton. I'm gonna invoke Ralphie from A Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
Adults love to say things like that, but kids know better. We knew darn well it was always better not to get caught.
Always better. Always better not to get
caught.
She's right.
You know, it got me on the straight and narrow. So, but by the way, we're coming up on the time of year for A Christmas Story, Groz, and that's the last time I will interrupt you. But I love that movie. Can't wait for it every year.
Oh, I watch it probably 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I love that TBS and TNT both carry it for 24 hours.
Right. Exactly.
Being a Cowboys fan, Thanksgiving was always fun because they always played.
Mm-hmm.
And you were probably 10, I'm going to guess, 9 or 10 years old. Because I think when you talk to a Cowboy fan of my age and they ask what was the best Thanksgiving game, everyone answers the same game. There's actually no argument about it for the most part. The Clint Longley game.
Clint Longley.
Are you familiar with Clint Longley?
I recognize that name. I'm just not sure what...
I found a great story about this. It was a 74 game between Washington and Dallas. Washington was very good. They were leading the division. They were going to lock up a playoff spot, it looked like. This was 2 years, 3 years after they were in the Super Bowl. They were really good. Billy Kilmer went up 16-3, and Staubach got knocked out with about 10 minutes left in the third quarter. And the only backup quarterback they had was a rookie named Clint Longley from Abilene Christian. And I remember watching the game at my grandparents' house. I'd never heard of the guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at a story about the game right now, and I think you'll love this quote from Dyron Talbot. Because according to the story, injuring Staubach was a part of the Redskins' game plan. Here's the quote. "If you knock Staubach out, you got that rookie facing you," said Dyron Talbot days before the game. "That was one of our goals. If we do that, it's great. He's all they have." Imagine saying that nowadays. Your goal is to knock the quarterback. So Clint Longley comes in, hadn't played a game. No one had heard of him. And all of a sudden goes nuts, throws a touchdown pass to, I think it was Billy Joe Dupree. Let me look at this. Yes, it was. And then threw a 50-yarder to Drew Pearson with 30 seconds left to win the game. It was the most exciting, probably, Cowboys game I can ever remember. And Clint Long, I mean, he was like this hero out of nowhere. And I remember, the whole thing with him was, I think him and Staubach got into a fight the following year in training camp. And hard to imagine Roger Staubach getting into a fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, no kidding.
Thinking about him, and he wound up going to San Diego and never amounted to anything. But definitely the most – ask any longtime Cowboy fan, and they know that name and they know that game.
No kidding. I'm looking at – he played just 3 years in the league, 2 with Dallas, and as you said, he went to San Diego after that, back when they were the San Diego Chargers. And
But down 16-3 on Thanksgiving Day – you've never played a game. The Redskins are killing you. They're killing Roger Staubach. Your offense can't score. Mm-hmm. And you come in and throw two touchdown passes, including one with 30 seconds to go to win it. I don't think I've ever been so excited to watch a game on television. I was 13 years old, I think, when that went on.
Yeah, so that would have been – I would have been probably 10, 11, something like that.
Yeah, 73 or 74. It was just right. That's – and I think of Thanksgiving memories, that's the one that I think of. I think of that game, the utter, absolute surprise of that game.
Well, and we were talking about the numbers, too, of quarterbacks back in that age. His career numbers, 45% completion, 5 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He's doing better than most back then.
I look up at the game, and he was 11 for 20 in the game in a relief effort.
Uh-huh.
Throwing 20 passes in the second half of an NFL game in the 70s was
what
didn't happen very often.
When I came in here, I swear the Seahawks did the Seahawks play once on Thanksgiving down in Dallas?
They did. It was like 2008, 2007, 2008.
No, I thought there was one back in like the 80s, before I came.
I was looking because I do a thing at My Northwest every week this week in Seahawks history, and actually this week is the Bo Jackson game.
Oh, okay.
But you know, they obviously did with Richard Sherman and those guys, and they did in 08. They had a great game in that stretch. I remember what team it was, the team that that just missed the playoffs. You were you on that team?
Oh, the 86 team. Yeah, they finished.
86 team?
That was the year they were 10-6, and they missed the playoffs, I think, 10-6, and they destroyed both of the Super Bowl participants. They destroyed both
Dallas
Denver
and Denver.
And Dallas.
Yeah, and that 5-game stretch to end the year, and I thought that was on Thanksgiving Day, and it wasn't.
Okay.
So I don't know if they played one earlier than 08 with Holmgren, and then, of course, the 49er one where they had Thanksgiving dinner on the field. That was a high point in that rivalry.
Yeah. So, okay, here we go. November 27th, 1980, Dallas Cowboys 51, Seattle Seahawks 7.
Oh, my God. No wonder it doesn't come to mind.
Yeah. Well, I just remember the veterans talking about it, and they were talking about what a ridiculous turnaround it was and how difficult it was because, you know, you had to, you know, just the turnaround of only just a few days, and now it's pretty commonplace. I mean, Thursday night games all the time. But, oh, my gosh, they got destroyed. But you know what? This is the one. Groz, here you go. November 27th, 1986. This has got to be part of that streak where they were the hottest team in the NFL. This is the one I heard about. Seahawks won 31-14 at Dallas in the Thanksgiving Day, November 27th, 1986. And I remember them talking about, you know, again, how they had just killed the team the week before, and, you know, nobody thought they were going to win. They were huge underdogs and went in there and beat them. So, yeah, that's quite a feat there, pulling that off.
They might have been playing the best football in the league and didn't make the playoffs because of just I think they had like a 4 or 5-game losing streak in the middle of that year for some reason.
Right. Yeah, I went to the Super Bowl after that year, and when Denver made it in, and again, the Seahawks had just destroyed Denver, and it was Denver and the Giants. And my agent, Marvin Demoff, got me a ticket to go to the Super Bowl. So it was down at the Rose Bowl, and it was up in like the nosebleeds. And some guy comes up and goes, "Hey, man, I'm a player on the Broncos, and I'm hurt, and you're sitting next to my dad. I understand if you don't want to change with me, switch with me, but these are right on the 50-yard line, like 4 rows up, 5 rows up. They're the best seat in the house. I really want to sit next to my dad." And I'm like holding on to the ticket, and I'm like, I don't think so. You know, I'm a college kid. I'm thinking this guy's going to rip me off or something. So he starts to walk away like, no problem. He's really cool about it. I'm going, "Hey, come back here. You sit with your dad. What am I doing? Fine, I'll take the chance." So he gives me the ticket, and sure enough, I'm down there right on the 50-yard line. And I was sitting with a bunch of guys from New York, and they were like, "It's snowing back home." And I think it was like 65 degrees, but it was sunny. So, of course, they had their shirts off. And
they
were having a good old time. And I was rooting for the Broncos because I wanted, you know, John Elway and everything. But yeah, that was my one of my Super Bowl. And I guess I've been to four now, and a couple of them bad experiences. One of them a really good experience.
Yeah, I've had mainly good experiences. I went to the first one I went to was the one at Stanford Stadium. I think it was the
the San Francisco and Miami.
San Francisco and Miami, right? Marino Super Bowl.
Yeah,
was 84. The first one. I lived in Northern California then.
Okay.
And then I saw the Cowboys beat Atlanta. Cowboys in Atlanta beat Buffalo.
Yeah.
I think it was the second time. The terrible game.
That was
you know what I'm talking about. And I stayed for the Seahawk game in Detroit.
Right.
But, you know, those games are if you're just going to be a fan, after you've been to one or two, it's like a 5.5-hour deal. It's hard to get in. It's hard to get out. It's actually, once you've done it, my experience is it's more fun to watch on television once you've said you've been to one.
Yeah. Worst Super Bowl ever, and we'll go to break and come back on Wyman and Bob, talk a little bit about what we think the Seahawks need to do. The Seahawks win if. I went to one, John, or Groz, it was the worst one that I think it was one of the worst Super Bowls. It was the Niners and the Chargers. And the Chargers.
Steve Young's game?
Yeah. They were never in that game. But we went to this. We're at this great party. But we got invited to another guy's house. And we had to go. And we're like, yeah, we can't be rude. We're really having fun here. So we go over there. And we get there. And the first thing is, hey, what do you got to drink? And they're like, we got Coke. And we have water. And I'm like, yeah. And lemonade. We've got iced tea, and I'm like, oh, man. So we're at this great party, and now we're at this. It was a horrible game, but, you know, and also it was dry there, and that's typically not what we do on Super Bowl Sunday. So
no.
Anyway, coming up next, we'll talk about Seahawks win if, and also there's a couple of pretty funny texts of people, the things that they've sent in about their worst experiences on Thanksgiving Day. That's next on Wyman and Bob, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. Dave Wyman, Dave Grosby, the Groz. Before we get to Seahawks win if, and text it in, by the way, to 710-710, what's the key to a victory? We won't be on the air again until afterwards on Tuesday when we're going to be talking about it. But before we get to that, yeah, text in your predictions or what you think they need to do. A few sort of bad stories as far as Thanksgiving preparation goes. My daughter cooked her first turkey when she was 12 years old. She wanted to help, and so she put in the bird, and she put it in upside down, so the breast was on the bottom. Now, I've heard this one before. It turned out to be the best turkey. We always cook it that way, and I've heard of that before. Because all the juice, it gets encased in, you know, the top part. It doesn't go out the bottom. And so it's supposed to be really good, but I don't know.
It makes sense.
Yeah, and I've heard people do this before, and then you turn it over at the end just to brown it, you know, to brown the top of it. But I know how to cook a turkey right now, and I'm doing it this way. And if something gets screwed up, it's a big risk, Gross. You don't want to.
I'm a believer, and if you got something that works, stick with it.
Yeah.
It's like my line about, you know, don't get tired of winning.
Yeah.
You know, if you're making something that tastes good, keep making it that way.
Yeah. 425 says, I had an emergency appendectomy. Oh, that was nice. On Thanksgiving, as I'm being wheeled into the OR, a nurse complained that her turkey had just come out of the oven. And she said, I notified her I didn't want to be there either. So, yeah, nice little memory of Thanksgiving and appendectomy. And then
one's happy.
Yeah, last one. Happy. Mother-in-law's candied yams were expired and got about six people ridiculously sick for the next 24 hours. It's been a family joke for years. That's all you can do is joke about it, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, but that's, boy, knock on wood, I've avoided that. I've never had anything like that happen.
Yeah.
All right, and I do all the cooking, so it's...
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's all on me.
So what are you making? Because I'm doing turkey, mashed potatoes, and gravy.
It's just the three of us this year, so we're just doing a big turkey breast.
Okay.
But yeah, mashed potatoes, stuffing. We love stuffing. And of course, jellied cranberry sauce. And I think my mother-in-law will make some spinach or something like that.
Okay.
So we'll have pretty traditional stuff.
Yeah, mine is always, I kind of like the Hawaiian rolls. The rolls are a big part of it because,
oh, yeah, we've got, we're baking some, you go to Hawaiian rolls?
Yeah, we've been doing that lately.
Oh, we're just doing the standard baking some biscuits.
Yeah. Text it in if you think.
Fresh.
Do Hawaiian rolls fit at Thanksgiving? I think they do. I think they do too. Yeah. All right, what do the Seahawks need to do, Groz? Enough of this nonsense about food. It's making me hungry right now, for one thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
What do you think they need to do to win this game, if you could pick one thing?
It seems to me that for the next four games, where you're going to be a considerable favorite, you're a better team, you're playing better, that you get back to the very basics. It's really, if they don't turn the ball over, I know this sounds ridiculous, but it really isn't. If they don't turn the ball over, they don't have to play particularly good on offense or particularly good on defense. These teams that they're playing the next 4 weeks got there by beating themselves. Mm-hmm. The Eagles will beat themselves. The Jets will beat themselves. The Giants will beat themselves. If you don't make mistakes, you're going to win. It's the easiest way to win, and you don't have to play great on either side of the ball to win that way. So I would say that the most important thing for this game and the next couple of games, if you don't turn the ball over, they're going to win the game.
Right. Well, and, you know, to your point, Groz, I'm looking at the bottom two of the bottom four as far as turnover ratio. Philadelphia Eagles, -9. Washington football team, -6. So, I mean,
3-7 and 3-6-1.
Yep. And then the Giants are, you know, they're at the bottom, but they're at zero. So at least they're, you know, even. But that is one of the most indicative stats that you can find is turnover ratio. And surprisingly, the Jets aren't as bad as I thought they would be. I'm trying to, they're kind of middle of the, they're zero. But, you know, if you look at where the Seahawks are, and you're right, it's about not turning it over as much as it is taking it away. We always think of turnover ratio as takeaways, but I was looking when they played the Patriots. The Patriots are amazing in that category, and I always go back 8 years just because of that's when Russell and Bobby got here, and you know, and Schneider and Carroll pretty much got the guys that they wanted. Over that period of time, the Seahawks averaged about 17, 18 giveaways per year. The Patriots were like 15. It was less than one per game, and that's why they've always been at the top. So it's a huge part of it. I don't think it's too simplistic of a stat that you're putting out there. I mean, you just take care of the ball and look.
If they
at the games they've lost. Right.
The other teams will. I mean, you know, it's not. You know, you're worried about it against a really good team because you've obviously got to do something against their defense or something against their offense, and they're not going to turn it over either. But when you're playing games like this, man, just keep guys healthy and don't make mistakes, and it's gonna come. I mean, you know, who cares if you win 14-3 or 35-7?
Right.
That made a difference.
Yeah, I wonder, though. I wonder if people will freak out over that. If you beat the Jets 21-20, let's say, and, you know, we're not looking past the Eagles. So let's say the Eagles, they win by 3 or 4 or 2 or something like that.
Is everybody will, man. You know people will.
Yeah. So, by
and
the way,
nothing can be done about that,
right?
From a fan standpoint.
But you look at your point, the turnover ratio. Right now, the top teams: Pittsburgh Steelers, 10-0, +12. Tennessee Titans, I think they've lost two. I think they're 7-3. The next one, Kansas City, 9-1.
9-1.
And then Cleveland. Yeah, Cleveland.
They're 7-3 or 6-4 or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so,
Indy 7-3.
Yep. You look at those teams and turnover ratio. For me, Groz, because here's what they've done the last four games. They got 30 quarterback hits and 16 sacks in the last four. So I'm saying, and last year when we went to Philadelphia in the regular season, 3 sacks and 9 quarterback hits. And then in the playoffs, you remember that's when Carson Wentz went out because of a Jadeveon Clowney hit. 7 sacks in that game, 9 quarterback hits. Sacks are huge plays. And, you know, said this over the last few months, did a little thing I called Sackstravaganza and went back and looked at all the sacks that the Seahawks had. They had 28 last year, which was almost dead last. But if you look at those sacks, the drives, where they got those sacks, 0 touchdowns scored against that the defense. So they're huge
it's
plays.
It's a big play.
Yeah. So I'm going to say, hey, just keep the average that they have the last four. If they get four sacks on Carson Wentz, I think the Seahawks win the game. Yeah, and text it in to 710-710. But, yeah, so happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And really hope that everybody enjoys things. But we're going to come back next with the professor. That's next on Wyman and Bob.